This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله وصلى الله وسلم وبارك على عبده ورسوله ومصطفى نبينا محمد وعلى آله وصحبه ومن اهتدى بهداه السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته and welcome to Lessons in Fiqh. Today's chapter deals with menstruation and we have introduced this chapter last program and talked about some of the issues related to it. And inshallah today we will begin in reading the hadiths. Hadith number 118.
Narrated by Aisha radiallahu anha, Fatima binti Abu Hubaysh had a prolonged flow of blood. And Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam taught her, the menstruation blood is a dark recognizable blood. So if that come then avoid prayer. And if it is the other light color blood, then perform wudu, meaning ablution, and offer salat. For that is the blood of offering. And in the hadith of Asma bin Ubays, radiallahu anha, reported by Abu Dawud, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, she should sit in a tub, and when she sees the yellowish color of the surface of the water, she should take a bath once for the Zuhr and Asar prayer, and take another bath for the Maghrib and Isha prayers, and take a bath once for the Fajr prayer. And in between this time, she should perform ablution before performing any act of worship which requires purification.
This hadith deals with menstruation. And it deals with it in the sense that lots of the problems caused by menstruation is when a woman has this bleeding and it's mixed with menstruation. If a woman only has menstruation, then she has no problem. The minute she sees the blood, she stops from praying, refrains from praying. And the minute the blood stops, she goes back again. But the problem is with the times that she's not certain whether this is menstruation or it's just normal bleeding. Fatima bint Abi Hubaysh was one of the female companions of the Prophet ﷺ, among others. And they say that there were, at the time of the Prophet ﷺ, 10 female companions who used to have what we call istihaba, which is not menstruation, but rather a sort or form of bleeding that makes a person mixed up whether it is or it is not the monthly period. So Fatima came to the Prophet ﷺ and told him about her case. And the Prophet asked her ﷺ to recognize the bleeding because menstruation has certain characteristics to it. The color is black and dark, different than the reddish color of normal bleeding. The smell is not that pleasing, different to blood. And it is usually discharged, it comes out accompanied by stomach and back pains, while normal bleeding is not. So usually, and generally speaking, the monthly period is between 6 to 7 days. And some women are a bit longer than this. Others are quite shorter than this. Scholars say that there is no limitation for the minimal period, meaning that it can come for just half an hour, and it can come for a day, it could come for 6 or 7 days. There's no minimal period for it. But there is a maximum. They say that it could not exceed 15 days because it's a monthly period, and if it exceeds 15 days, then it's exceeding most of the time, and it cannot be the case normally. So they say the minimum, there is no minimum. The maximum, they say it's 15 days. And what happens when a woman has this istihada? What does she do if a woman has this bleeding and she's mixed up? She doesn't know if this is her menstruation or it is a normal bleeding. Scholars say that after looking at all the hadiths we have, there are 3 steps to be followed in sequence. 1, if a woman is used to having her period in a designated number of days, whether in the beginning, in the middle, or in the end of every lunar month, she has a fixed monthly period, then this is quite easy. For example, if a woman, since she reached the age of puberty, is used to having the first day of every lunar month until the 6th day, her monthly period. This is the period of her monthly period. And after she got married, after maybe taking the birth control pills and with all those things that increase or decrease the hormones and the food we eat and the things that we consume, something happened and this monthly period or this menstruation was disturbed. And she started seeing the blood for about 20 days every month. This is not possible. It cannot be menstruation. So what would she do? Scholars say that she will sit, by meaning sit, she will not physically sit, she will refrain from praying and fasting her usual monthly period, which starts at the very beginning of every lunar month and ends on the 6th of that month. And the minute the 6th day is over, she should shower and start to pray, though she is still bleeding. Because this bleeding from 6th day until the 20th of that month, we consider this period to be istihada. So this is number one, which is that she should refer back to her monthly period that she is used to. Because she knows that for the past 6, 7, 10 years, it's always been coming on the same time. Now, if she doesn't have a fixed monthly period, meaning that when she reached the age of puberty and she started to menstruate, 3-4 years she would have it at the beginning of the month, in the middle of the month, at the end of the month. It's mixed. Sometimes she has it for 2 months, she doesn't have anything. And sometimes it comes 10 days in a row. So now she is faced with 20 days a month bleeding. Of course, it cannot be her menstruation, as we said, that the maximum is 15. So what would she do? She doesn't know when to begin and when to end. As in the hadith of Fatima bint Abi Hubaysh, the Prophet ﷺ told her that she should look at the signs. He told her that the menstruation blood is a dark, recognizable blood. So if it comes, then avoid prayer. And if it is the other light-colored blood, then perform a wudu. So the Prophet is asking her to distinguish. And as I said, there are 3 signs usually accompanying menstruation blood, which is the color, the smell, and the pains accompanying it. And women have a feeling, they know. So if a woman does not know when her period starts, then she should recognize and try to distinguish which is which. And the minute she distinguishes this is the beginning and this is the end, then afterwards she may perform wudu for every salah, and it doesn't matter what comes out because this bleeding is just a vein. But what happens, and this is the third step, what happens if the woman does not know when her period starts or ends and is unable to recognize? She's bleeding 20 days every month and simply she cannot tell. The blood from day 1 to day 20 is the same, looks the same, whether it's thick and black throughout the whole period or it's light throughout the whole period. What does she do? Scholars say that she must refer to her relatives. She must look at those who are related to her, in the sense that she looks at her sisters, she looks at her mother, and she sits or she refrains from praying at the same time they're doing. Because usually speaking, families, you know, girls and women in the same family share mostly the same period. They have the same period. Maybe it's because of the genes, maybe because of this or that. Regardless, they usually have the same period. That's the family, the females in the family share the same period in time. So if this woman is not able to recognize which is which, then she should look at her sisters. If she doesn't have a sister, her mother's. If her mother's mother is too old, she looks at her aunts, her cousins, and accordingly, because she cannot recognize or distinguish, she has to stick with them and presume that this is the period that she should refrain from fasting and consider herself to be menstruating, and afterwards she can easily perform ablution and pray. Now, in the hadith of Asma bint Umais, the Prophet ﷺ is telling her to have obligatory bath for every two prayers. Dhuhr and Asr, one bath. Maghrib and Isha, one bath. Fajr, one bath. Scholars say, such as Abu Hanifa, Malik, and the Shafi'i, that it's not obligatory. And that this hadith, this order, was either abrogated or the hadith is not authentic. But to say what some scholars also say, that such as Al-Imam Ahmad, he says that this is preferable. It's recommendable. Why? Because she is not certain if this is a period or not. So she may perform a total bath for every two prayers. And this is what we call Al-Jam'a Suri, joining on the surface. Because one delays dhuhr just before Asr prayer, and she performs ghusl, total bath, and she performs dhuhr prayer exactly just before the adhan for Asr prayer is called, and then she prays Asr prayer as if they were joined together. Similarly is with Maghrib and Isha, and Fajr is by itself, stands alone. But again, asking a woman to perform obligatory bath three times a day is asking too much. Though it's better for her veins, though it's better for her bleeding, because water helps her bleeding and decreases it, nevertheless, we cannot make it as obligatory. The scholars say it is preferable. I think we have a short break. We'll stop, inshallah. Stay tuned and we will be right back.
You're live on Ask Another. Questions, please.
I would like Sheikh to comment on that and to give me how can I answer.
Listening to the adhan and repeating after the muadhin is similarly a highly recommended act of worship.
So how does she reply to her?
This is what we call it an invalid analogy. Because simply there is no comparison between answering 4 out of 5 in any exam and skipping a fariḍa such as, or a pillar such as the prayer. No one is exempt from praying except women during their menses.
Sister Saud also wants to know if a woman has to cover her feet when she's praying.
The four fuqaha, Abu Hanifa, or Malik, or Shafi'i, or Ahmed, the greatest representatives of the fiqh schools, are in agreement. It is haram.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back. The following hadith was narrated by Hamnah bin Jahsh. Who will read this for us? Hadith 119.
Narrated by Hamnah bin Jahsh. My prolonged bleeding flowed abundantly and severally. So I came to the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam to ask for his religious opinion. He said, "This is the result of a stroke or stab by the devil. Therefore, you must observe your mens of for 6 or 7 days."
You should observe your menses.
Menses for 6 or 7 days. Then take a bath when you see that you are purified and quick clean. Pray for 23 or 24 days and fast and pray. For that will indeed... I'm sorry, sending my glasses.
That's okay. Indeed suffice you.
Suffice you. And do like this every month. Just as the order women menstruate. All right, I'm sorry. And are purified. But if you are strong enough to delay the Dhuhr prayer and advance the Asr prayer, then take a bath and combine the Dhuhr and the Asr prayer. Then delay the Maghrib prayer and advance the Isha prayer. Then take a bath and combine the two prayers. Do so and take a bath at Fajr, meaning dawn, and perform the dawn prayer. Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam said these two opinions. These two options. This one appeals more to my liking, meaning taking a bath at these three times daily.
Okay. Jazakallah khair. It's difficult reading without glasses.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
As it's difficult reading with glasses. I have problems in looking at this. Two small letters. Nevertheless, we got the information we needed, and this is exactly what we mentioned before the break. It's the same thing. Just as a reminder, Hamnah bin Jahsh was one of the companions of the Prophet ﷺ. It is said that there are three sisters, all daughters of Jahsh: Hamnah bin Jahsh, Zainab bin Jahsh, and another one, and they all had this istihada. Among one of the 10 companions, female companions that had this. And Hamnah bin Jahsh, she's a well-known companion. She was punished for saying something that was not true and lawful of Aisha. May Allah be pleased with her and pleased with her too. And she was punished for that. She is well-known. Her sister is the wife of the Prophet, Zainab bint Jahsh. And again, I don't think we have to go through the hadith as it explains what we have mentioned just before the break. Nevertheless, we say that it is not obligatory for a woman to have a total bath three times a day if she has this istihada, this running bleeding. But the Prophet says, Assalam, that this option is preferred to me. He likes this, the Prophet, Assalam, that though it's not obligatory. So if a woman has the power to have obligatory bath, ghusl, three times a day, this is good because the Prophet preferred this, Assalam, and it's good for her bleeding. It helps stop the bleeding, and inshallah, it would be considered as a form of cure and medication. The following hadith narrated by Ummu Habiba bint Jahsh. So this is the third sister. There is Zainab bint Jahsh, Hamna bint Jahsh, Umm Habiba bint Jahsh. This hadith was narrated by Aisha, excuse me. Hadith 120.
Okay.
I think it's Rushdie.
All right. Narrated Aisha radiallahu anha, Ummu Habiba bint Jahsh complained to Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wasallam about the blood which flows beyond the menstruation period. He said, "Keep away from prayer the length of time that your menses prevented you, then take a bath and offer prayers, and cease to take a bath for every prayer."
Okay, this hadith was reported by Muslim, so it's an authentic hadith, and it tells us that Habiba bin Jahsh did not perform three obligatory baths for during the day. She performed how many?
Five.
It shows you how strong she was, because she didn't even want to have any slight doubt that her prayer was not acceptable. And it tells us also that a menstruating woman must not pray. And this is not mentioned in the Quran, right? Does it say that a menstruating woman must not pray in the Quran?
No,
it doesn't. And again, this is very important. Nowadays, we have Satan doing so many things to divert us from our right path. And one of the oldest trick in his book is to not accept hadith. So you find a lot of people, you know, showing that they are people of knowledge and they're pious, and when you tell them that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said so and so, said, "Well, excuse me, I did not hear this from the Prophet, so I will not accept it. Only talk to me with the Quran." Now, on the surface, this looks like a good argument, because yeah, okay, the Quran is the word of Allah. Hadith, we have weak hadith, strong hadith, da'if, sahih, authentic, unauthentic. It's a lot of hassle. And this is not the case at all, because the Holy Quran is a general book that is explained to us by the Prophet ﷺ, by his actions, by his deeds, and by his words. Otherwise, it would have been sufficient and enough for Allah Azza wa Jal to reveal the Quran and have everyone has a copy, and that's it. There's no need for a messenger or a prophet. This is not the case. If you look in the Quran, you will find that there are hundreds, literally hundreds of issues that the Quran did not mention to us. And without the Sunnah, you're in trouble. So whether you take it all or leave it all, whether you take Islam, all of it, Quran and Sunnah, or don't try to make up a new religion. Because in the Quran, it doesn't tell you that you have to pray five prayers in the day and night. It doesn't tell you when to start and when to end. It doesn't tell you that Fajr is two rak'ah, Maghrib is three, and the rest are four rak'ahs. It doesn't tell you how to do them, how to prostrate, how to bow. It doesn't tell you what to read and what to recite. It doesn't tell you about zakah, what's the percentage to pay on your gold and silver, and what's the percentage to pay on currency or on the products that come from the ground, you know, your crops and fruits and vegetables. It doesn't tell you what you pay for your cattle, for sheep, for cows, camels, how much. It doesn't tell you all of these things. There are so many things that it doesn't tell you, and it doesn't tell you that a menstruating woman must not pray. Only the Sunnah tells you so. So you cannot separate them. And that is why the Prophet ﷺ warned us and said, "Beware. I do not want to hear that a man sitting, you know, on his couch, leaning down on it and saying, 'Listen, whatever is in the Quran, we accept. Whatever is not in the Quran, we reject.' This is unacceptable. The Prophet warned and said, Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, I have been given two, the Quran and similar to it with it, which is the revelation of Sunnah. The Prophet does not talk anything except in accordance to the revelation of Sunnah. The Quran is different. Allah Azza wa Jalla tells him to say something. But in the Sunnah, he makes his own judgment. He says what Allah Azza wa Jalla tells him, or he thinks is right. If it's wrong, immediately Allah will correct him, as we've mentioned this before. Brother Rushdie, you have a question.
Okay, so we find few of people that reject Sunnah because they believe that our Quran is revealed by our Quran is protected by Allah, so there's no change inside it. But can we say to the people who rejected the Sunnah, kafir or not?
Well, this is a very important thing. It is not our job to label people. It's now this is the talk of the hour. If you begin looking around and labeling people, you'll end up in isolation. So this guy rejects Sunnah, he's kafir. This guy does not put his right hand on his left hand while praying, he's kafir.
But it's different with put your right hand on your left hand. I mean that in Holy Quran there's many verses that Allah taught us, "Wa ta'kum ar-rasul fakhudhu wa manahakum anhum fantahu ati Allah ati ar-rasul wa amr minkum."
All what you're saying, verses. I completely understand what you're saying, but now to say that a person is a kafir or not, there are conditions that have to be fulfilled. And there are restrictions that have to be removed. And you cannot come to a person prostrating to Buddha. He's a Muslim, but he thinks that this is okay. You cannot go and tell him, you're a kafir. This is un-Islamically acceptable. You have to fulfill the conditions that he has knowledge, that he knows that this is not acceptable, that he is willing, and that he has the power to choose. And you have to remove the restrictions, which is that nobody is forcing him to do so. He has no doubts or so on. So labeling people is completely out of the question. Ahlus Sunnati wal Jama'ah say that whoever does this is a kafir. But we don't say individuals are kafir.
Okay,
so
I get it.
It's a different story. Now, if a person, I tell you, if a person refuses and rejects Sunnah completely, he's a kafir. Okay. Now, I know that Dick or Tom rejects Sunnah. He claims to be a Muslim. It depends only on the Quran. I do not have the right to go and say, well, 1 plus 1 equals 2. Whoever rejects Sunnah is a kafir. He rejects Sunnah, then he's a kafir. No, this is wrong. It's just a long process, and you have to go through that. And it's a scientific process, and it's not for you and I. It's for scholars to bring this man, show him what wrong he did, and to clarify things to him. If he still insists and he persists on doing this, the judge will give his verdict on him. I'm afraid that this is all the time we have for today's program. I promise you, inshallah, next time we meet, we'll try to elaborate a bit on this issue. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.